Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
So glad you're here for The Advertising Show, brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And by Captivate Network. Visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. Today we've got, momentarily here, Gene Bliss out of a brand new book. It's a feature on Trader Joe's. And we're going to listen to what Gene has to say about that.
It's a great story.
It's, and a good feature as well. Shameen Abbas, our activist for excellence, grassroots marketing, a little bit later on in the show. We have Michael Dunn with us. Michael is out of Chicago. I believe this weekend he is in San Francisco or something.
Office, yeah.
But Michael is chairman and CEO of the global consultancy Profit. It's Profit.com. Profit helps Fortune 500 clients and their senior executives more effectively use branding, marketing, design, and innovation to drive profitable growth. We also have a book that he brought along today.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Marketing Accountability Imperative. And they're calling the book the ideal book for cutting through the clutter of outmoded ideas and misinformation that often surround marketing effectiveness or lack of.
Yeah.
Yeah, it provides clear answers and a blueprint for ongoing success.
It's a great book.
So we will look forward to chatting with Michael here and we'll learn more about what he does as well, too, on the advertising show. There was a thing that it happened in New York. About a week or so ago, I guess it was, a one-day promotion thing for Verizon. Basically, what they did is they got the cab rides down to 99 cents.
Really?
99 cents. A typical cab ride, 10 to 20 bucks
right.
in the Big Apple or more, depending upon the traffic. But basically, for this one day, Verizon sponsored the 99-cent cab rides that start from select locations with Verizon-branded taxis, for destinations anywhere in Manhattan. In 2 weeks, the phone giant bringing New Yorkers a steeply discounted summer treat. They're also going to be doing Mr. Softy ice cream from vendor trucks at select points, 99 cents.
Hmm.
Why do they do this? Well, it's part of a guerrilla marketing effort, obviously, by the wireless phone carrier developed by Interpublic Group McCann Erickson and sister media shop Universal McCann, basically to tout Verizon business segment that has low consumer awareness, and that is prepaid cellular plans. As you might guess, the prepaid plan's daily usage fee is 99 cents.
Really?
So, I like when I see stuff like that and read about stuff like that. It's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea, and that one guy that tried to get the trip to Trenton just because he picked up a taxi in Midtown did not work. Read the fine print.
Exactly.
Cannot do that.
Exactly. It would be kind of cool to put in those cabs some Verizon phones as well. Call somebody.
Well, and then that's a good idea. But, you know, then it's kind of like, sir, I didn't say you could call Abu Dhabi.
And in Manhattan, that probably would happen, huh?
Good.
Exactly.
Good.
Or in any major metropolitan area. What do you have there?
Yeah. You know, Gourmet Magazine, it's a great magazine, has launched an online social network for home entertainment, similar to Evite, if you're familiar with that, Ray. The site's called GourmetGuestList.com. It helps users plan events, send invitations, plan menus. Users can also share photos and recipes. It went live June 1st. GourmetGuestList.com was born out of the magazine's marketing department, yet is not affiliated with the editorial product. Style tips, entertainment information, and on the site are provided by marketers, retailers, and style experts, which to me sounds like code for pay to play.
Yeah.
Might be.
Wow.
It'd be a good way to generate revenue, but it's a good idea, though. If you're interested, check out GourmetGuestList.com.
Yeah. And you can put the W's in there if you want
to. Yeah, if you want to.
Whatever the heck you
Optional.
Want to do. It's Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe and Gene Bliss, our very special guest weekly here on The Advertising Show with a great feature called The Customer Experience. Today she's talking about Trader Joe's. Listen.
Welcome to The Customer Experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Shopping at Trader Joe's. Customers smile as they reach for products and become a part of the inside joke. Thai-style dumplings are produced by Trader Ming. Pizza comes from Trader Giotto. Vitamins are courtesy of, well, who else? Trader Darwin. Charming as those names are, what really rules at Trader Joe's is how things taste. They decide on what products to sell based on the palate of its employee tasting panel in Monrovia, California. Once a product makes it to the stores, though, it goes through the ultimate test, customer tasting. Trader Joe's believes that customers' taste buds will have the final say if something stays or something goes. A belief that has made them a $6.5 billion supermarket. Each Trader Joe's store carries about 3,000 items compared to traditional stores carrying 30,000. Yet sales per square foot are $1,300 per square foot, double the supermarket industry average. Do you regularly connect with customers as they experience your products and services? Are you eating your food, wearing your clothes, and experiencing the same services you deliver? Detachment and cynicism comes when customers are defined only by research and reports.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
Don't forget, we'll tell you more about the book as it becomes available, Gene's brand new book, of which that is part of. Kind of got a sneak peek of the book.
Yeah.
What a great idea. Here at the Advertising Show, Michael Dunn just about to join us here. The book that he's promoting, The Marketing Accountability Imperative, is what it's called. The changeover, Leno going, well, coming up in the fall with a brand new show.
Right.
And basically, media buyers are fairly frosty on the prospects for a primetime Leno success.
I would be. I mean, you think?
Well, yeah. Why would you want to bet the farm on an uncertainty like that?
In fact, with Alex mentioning how Conan's not doing so well,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if anyone that was enjoying Leno before Conan took over may be just watching him a little earlier this year.
Okay. Well, it's what they're suggesting. The primetime show, September the 14th, by the way, basically, the new talk show, they're saying, the buyers are saying that it will draw fewer viewers than ABC and CBS on any given night, and they're balking at paying primetime prices for what they view as late-night ratings.
Hmm.
So, basically, he will guarantee NBC a third-place finish behind ABC and CBS in whatever hour he is in. That's from a senior VP director of strategic audience and analysis for Aegis Group's Carrot. He will do on par with what he did in late night.
Hmm. That's my theory. He'll deliver many of his viewers.
Yeah.
But, Ray, and we've talked about this, with the cost of what it takes to produce the Tonight Show, or the Jay Leno show in
right.
prime time, is a fraction of what these scripted TV programs cost.
Oh,
so,
man, yeah.
So if they're not, let's say they're making half of what they would on a primetime program, they're going to make a lot more on the net.
That's right. We'll film at 11, basically, or 10 at this particular case.
Yeah.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and Michael Dunn just about to join us here, author of the brand new book, The Marketing Accountability Imperative. And we know you'll enjoy the interview. Tell a friend to switch it on, too, if you'd like. TheAdvertisingShow.com. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Glad you're here.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn. Or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Men, nothing takes it off like Noxzema medicated shave.
Welcome back, Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, The Advertising Show, and as promised, a very special guest this weekend. He's in San Francisco, or may or may not be, I guess, I don't know. But Michael Dunn is Chairman and CEO of the global consultancy Profit. It's Profit.com. Profit helps Fortune 500 clients and their senior executives more effectively use branding, marketing, design, and innovation to drive profitable growth. So, with that said, Michael, it is a pleasure to have you here on The Advertising Show. Welcome.
Very glad to be here. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Well, Michael, Ray and I were talking before the show, and we were wondering, do you charge by the pound for this book, or is it by the page? Because either way, you're cashing in.
We're not cashing in. I don't. You could not feed a family of four for 2 days on a book deal. So. But there's definitely a lot of content in the book. So.
Yes, there is, and Ray and I were both commenting. We have a lot of requests from authors to be on the program, from publicists and PR executives, and we do not let them on the show unless we feel their book is worthy, and yours certainly fits the bill, published on Wiley, and both Ray and I highly recommend the Marketing Accountability Imperative. You're quoted as saying, Michael, the ultimate goal of marketing accountability is not to improve the rigor of ROI measurement, which caught me a bit off guard because it seems like today everyone's all about ROI. But you're saying that it's all about more efficient marketing and two phrases I find that don't normally come together, and that is to both make the cash register ring and build the brand. Usually it's we want to build the brand, let's not measure what we're doing, or let's make the cash register ring and deal with the brand later. Give us a sense of put that into words for us, and let's hear your philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, I think marketing accountability, this is like it's been on the agenda for 30 years, right? It's like this is not a new topic. But I think most of the energy and the heat over the last decade has been almost like overly metrics obsessed. It's been all about measurement and metrics and we need to get better analytics in place. And so, you know, what's happened is instead of actually making sure that the teams are asking the right questions and measuring the right kinds of things, what a lot of organizations have done has just inundated their executive peers, the finance group and what have you, with like thousands and thousands of metrics. And nobody really understands, in a lot of ways, how to interpret them. There are conflicting points of view in terms of how we should use them and apply them in decision making. And so it hasn't really helped solve the basic fundamental problem, which is, you know, CEOs and the executive teams want to understand, if I'm going to put $100 million into marketing this year, what kind of benefit is that going to drive for the business? And we believe that marketing can drive two kinds of benefit, right? It could be focused on driving the cash register this period. We call that like a sales response type of benefit, or you know, this quarter or next quarter, or it could be trying to drive what we talk about as a deferred revenue impact. So, you know, it's about creating a set of perceptions or attitudes or beliefs that will eventually help you ring the cash register, but it might not be until, you know, the year, next year or the year after. But, you know, we think a commitment to marketing accountability is being able to clearly articulate, you know, what kind of, benefit or what kind of response, a sales response or a deferred revenue response or an equity response, that investment is intended to drive, and getting people comfortable that you understand how that's supposed to happen over time.
So deferred revenue impact, is that code for brand?
Some people call it brand equity and equity impact. Some people might call it a customer equity impact. It kind of depends, but yeah. But it's a little bit about, you know, your banking. You're trying to create some set of perceptions, attitudes, beliefs that form a reservoir that you'll draw down from in some future period. And again, hopefully over time, convert that equity into sales.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how often when you're with clients that have a new budget, a new criteria, new objectives, how often do you sit with them during that initial meeting and have to either manage or maybe totally reinterpret their expectations of what their goals are to do, expectations with their budgets versus what you feel are maybe a new or different way of looking at it, and more importantly, a new way of gauging the effectiveness of what expectations could be with that budget.
Right. I mean, in terms of their, either they're pointing, they're overly ambitious in terms of what they can achieve with the spending, or maybe they're thinking that all the spending is supposed to solve this problem, problem A, but it should really be focused in a different place.
Yeah, I'm thinking that in some cases, client expectations and what really a marketing budget can do is out of whack with reality.
Right. In a lot of ways it is, and part of what we try and help the clients do is get very specific about what they're spending, you know, however they've envisioned spending this money, say their first pass at the budget. Like, how does their spending or their intended spending tie to have a clear line of sight to kind of the business objectives? And so, what are we supposed to be doing? Are we trying to change people's perceptions? Are we trying to change their incentives to buy? Are we trying to change their access to the product? You know, what kind of behavior are we targeting? Are we trying to get them to, you know, purchase again or purchase more or purchase a higher ticket item or, so what's the behavior? And then how does that behavior affect our P&L inside the business? And a lot of times people don't even have the basic linkages between what's the marketing objective, you know, what's the behavior, the value-creating behavior that an individual customer, consumer could take, you know, in response to this marketing program, and then how does that impact the P&L. And sometimes you could 75 or 80% of their intended spend has no line of sight to any of those things, right? And so it's a little bit about backing it up and saying, okay, you know, why do you believe this is where you should be investing? Kind of explain the thinking or the rationale and try and connect it into what everyone understands the business's priorities are, and make sure that the marketing priorities aren't pointed in this direction, whereas the business priorities are pointed in a different direction.
And on that note, we're going to take a break here. The book is called The Marketing Accountability Imperative, and our special guest out of actually lives in Chicago, but Michael Dunn is our special guest here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Just a moment, we'll continue.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Do you know exactly how to read an Oreo? Well, to do it, you unscrew it very fast.
And it's all about the marketing accountability imperative. Guest author is Michael Dunn. Michael, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thanks.
Yeah, and wrapping up last segment, I guess the struggles and challenges in dealing with clients, fortunately for you and your company, you have those. And if they were all doing the right thing, I guess, Michael, you and everybody else would be looking for a new line of work. Let's give a little a sense, our audience, of what's going on within your book. I think it's, a very well-written book. Reads very textbook-like, I might add, and it has a lot of backup and a lot of, to my way of thinking, a lot of credibility in the claims and advice that it makes, which not all business books do. In your book, you discuss six critical value levers that must be pulled when achieving accountable marketing, excuse me. Discuss with our audience, if you would, the impact of each of these and kind of take us through it, starting with strategy.
Yeah, no problem, though. Thanks a lot. A lot of times a CEO or someone will ask, like, look, I've been spending $500 million a year, and I'm not sure I'm getting anything for it. And so, you know, is my investment effective? Is it driving returns? And so when you're trying to understand that, we say, look, there's six value levers that, in a sense, your marketing team kind of pulls, places where you can either create value for the investments or you could make bad decisions and destroy value for the investments. So the first is the strategy lever, which is about, which customers should we be targeting with what kind of messages or benefits, right? Are we going to be about convenience? Are we going to be about low price position? Are we going to be about quality? Like, how do you make the choices around what target? Who's our most attractive target? And what benefit can we both credibly and relevantly deliver through the marketing? And so those are the kinds of decisions that get made at the strategy lever. And then, you jump from strategy lever to the content lever, which says, okay, so I understand I want to be about convenience or quality or what have you. So, but I take that strategic foundation and turn it into compelling content or compelling creative ideas. So, with Staples, for example, okay, they understood they wanted to be about hassle-free shopping. That was the strategic positioning. But then how do you take hassle-free shopping into something like the Easy Button? And, kind of now they're 8 years into the Easy campaign. And so those are the kinds of decisions that get made at the content lever. And so really, at those two levels, at strategy and content lever, that's really where you can dramatically improve the return on the investment. You can have like 10x, 20x stuff, campaigns or programs that are around, have a great strategic foundation and around great content. They can really drive disproportionate returns from the marketing.
Your last, the investment levels in market execution and field cost management are all certainly important considerations. You also have marketing vehicles that I think used to be called media, and in today's world, it's not just that simple, is it?
No. I mean, the marketing vehicles is, and again, if you're a B2B company or that goes to market through a sales force or a channel, the kinds of levers that you might pull around marketing, like events or sponsorships or thought leadership, are dramatically different than if you're a Procter & Gamble and you traditionally gone to market primarily through measured media. But what we're trying to do with the vehicles is say, where is your audience, and are you trying to deliver the right content to them kind of in the right places where they expect to see it? And so part of it's traditional media, TV, outdoor, print, newspaper, but obviously with a lot of the kind of innovation around direct and now all the innovation around the internet and viral and social media and even mobile marketing, you've seen an acceleration almost of the kinds of vehicles or formats you could invest behind.
In the minute that we have left in this segment, economic challenges, we're dealing with those today. What are your thoughts on clients and budget contractions that may be experienced nowadays?
I mean, there's some fascinating studies that have shown that people, over time, for brands that have been able to kind of maintain their spend and increase their share of spend or their share of voice during the down cycles, the amount of growth that they've seen has been demonstrable on the uptick, kind of 5 years of above competitive growth rates and what have you. So, where our clients have the balance sheet to do it, we are encouraging them to continue to invest behind the right kinds of products and brand ideas.
Back in just a moment with Michael Dunn. More with Michael. Michael is the chairman and CEO of the global consultancy firm Profit at Profit.com. But we're talking about a book today as well. It's called The Marketing Accountability Imperative, and we'll be back in just a minute with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe here on The Habit Session Show.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
The book is offered as something that provides clear answers and a blueprint for ongoing success. Well, I can't imagine a better reason to read it or to pick it up, right? So the Marketing Accountability Imperative, it's called. And Michael Dunn is the author of that book. Michael, it's great to have you here on The Advertising Show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, Michael, let's talk a little bit about the empowered CMO. For so many years, the CMO was nothing more than the fall guy when business was a bit off. Today, we find that when we talk to C-level executives with successful companies, the CEO is hands-on and involved in marketing and advertising and branding, and the CMO reports directly to the CEO, and it's a partnership, if you will, as opposed to the old days of CMO being the scapegoat. Talk a little bit about that, Michael.
No, it's great. It's a fascinating trend. I mean, I think it partially dates back to actually back at the turn of the last down cycle when organic growth became all the rage again, right? It's like, okay, acquisitive growth, it serves its purpose, but it's not always, it doesn't always consistently create shareholder value. 80% of the times, they don't. And so you started to get some kind of leading lights like Lafley at Procter and Amelt over at GE start to talk about the power and the benefit of organic growth. And when a lot of CEOs and companies started to look inside and say, okay, well, do we have the capabilities and the mindset to start to drive organic growth? Often, more often than not, they would still come back to, the idea that they were in deficit and around some of these capabilities, and where's a natural place to house some of these capabilities? Well, it's kind of marketing, right? Where do we get the kinds of customer insights that allow us to come up with new product and new service ideas, change our operational, the customer experience, or our operating platform, or our distribution channels to go after growth, and how, in a smart way, do we layer communications and promotional investment on top of that to drive it? And so, as you started to see more CEOs kind of looking for that in the business, it started to create opportunities for the right kind of people to step into a chief marketing officer role, much more like a general manager with marketing skills, or kind of a P&L owner with marketing skills, as opposed to an advertising person or a PR person that's kind of stepping up into an executive role but still mainly thinks about the communications, not the whole business. And, across lots of different sectors and a lot of different categories globally, you've seen a lot of really interesting, interesting opportunities for those kinds of marketers, and really great kind of collaborations between the CMO or the CEO and these empowered CMOs.
Before we wrap up this segment, and I want to leave our listeners with you sharing the top one or two takeaways from your book. Your book, you lay out a few landmines when it comes to achieving marketing accountability. I thought it might be good to touch on a few of those, if you would, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of tactical landmines. There are some strategic landmines, and there are some tactical landmines, right? You have to tackle some of the basic issues around, whether marketing is responsible for your base volume of sales or your incremental sales, you have to tackle some issues around kind of measurement. You have to tackle some issues usually around data, because a lot of the advances around kind of marketing measurement, marketing science rely on a pretty good data set around sales data, volume data, by channel, and what have you. And depending on the business type, they don't always have great data. So, you know, I think it's important before you get too far in and sell the promise of marketing accountability too aggressively to the CEO, it's a good sense to understand what landmines are going to be relevant mm-hmm. for your company and how you might get in front of them.
Well, you know, to ask for just one or two key concepts from the book, I know is not fair, because it's a wonderful read and it's full of great advice and wisdom for today's world. Any key phrase or thought you want to leave with our audience today?
So I think the important thing is that, you know, you've heard a lot of people talk about how, you know, analytics and data and quantitative stuff is getting more important as it relates to marketing. But, I mean, I think our big finding is that, you know, kind of marketing, excellent marketing that continues to drive value year over year gets generated by organizations that have a great capacity to think strategically, you know, drive excellent, drive excellence through their creativity and the creative process, execute really powerfully, and then have a discipline around analytics and measurement, so that they understand kind of what works, what doesn't, and they know how to flow that back up into the strategy and creative process.
And if you want to find out more about this, go get the book. It's The Marketing Accountability Imperative. Michael Dunn is the author of that book. Michael, it's been a pleasure. Sell lots of books and make lots of people famous and rich, all right?
Thanks so much, guys.
Okay. On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth back with another segment for you in just a minute.
There is somewhere better to get inspired creative ideas, and this is where it's at. OpenAd.net, the first online platform for advertisers, changing the way that ideas are created and traded. Access nearly 11,000 creative minds representing 125 countries around the world, waiting online to have a go at your brief. Imagine the impact such range and diversity of talent can have on your next advertising campaign. All creative work is IP cleared before you get it. We take care of all the details, while you get brilliant ideas in a fraction of the time, at a lower cost, and with a lot less fuss. No endless meetings, no away days. When a client needed a PR campaign to include people who couldn't make it to the G8 rally, they got 53,000 people to join a virtual protest and a campaign that won 2 international creative awards. OpenAd.net, busting down the walls of the ad industry. Put us to the test. Just go to openad.net and give us a try. What have you got to lose? The future starts here.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillen and Brad Forsyth.
From San Francisco comes...
Rice-a-roni, the San Francisco treat. Rice.
Thanks again to Michael Dunn, our special guest, and the book that he's promoting today. It's called The Marketing Accountability Imperative. It's a big book. It weighs a lot. That means they get more money for those things, I guess, right? More paper, right, Brad?
You're right.
But anyway, good to have Michael. We've got Kevin Smith coming up next week. Kevin is the principal of 360 Brand Machine, an innovative strategic marketing boutique, basically out of the Detroit area.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of automotive exposure, and he'll be with us next week here on the Advertising Show.
To talk automotive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got a lot to say, too, as well. And he had an Ad Age, I guess he did a paper for Ad Age or
did
something.
Did a nice article in Ad Age, and... I'm sure there are new things we need to talk about since that article came out.
Had a chance to talk with him just a little while ago here, and actually, as we set up the interview,
mm-hmm.
and instead of General Motors, it's called Government Motors now. Did you know that? How does it feel to be a major stockholder?
You know, Letterman did a funny thing. He said, they were going to come back and ask for another billions of dollars, and he said, the government said, well, take a seat and let me check with my general manager and see if we can't work that deal out. They wouldn't tell him directly. You know, they treat him like you're at a car dealer. Hold on, we can make that deal, but I need to check with my manager.
Yeah, exactly. I had a thing like that with my good friends at Verizon. I still have to check with their manager.
Jesus.
Oh, slime.
Customer business. Service.
It ain't exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
Shamin Abbas is with us here at the Advertising Show. She's talking about grassroots marketing here with Ray Shellens and Brad Forsyth. Let's listen.
And now it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
Going grassroots. Grassroots public relations is a bit of a catch-all that encompasses anything that isn't a pitch to the media for editorial coverage. I define it as a way to introduce a product or service directly to the target consumer without the media controlling the gateway. Two of the most common avenues for grassroots media are events and product distribution opportunities. Successful events bring your client's target audience into direct contact with their product or service and are commonly used to get patrons into restaurants, shoppers into stores, showcase a product in a compelling environment, grand openings, private parties, and the like. Product distribution opportunities are a way to get a client's product tied into an event that they're not hosting. Insertions into goodie bags, displays, sponsorship, and hosting opportunities fall into this category, which is especially good for a client that does not have a location of its own conducive to events. In any major and media market, you'll have some sort of social season in which there are charities and fundraisers, in fact, community events and so forth. And a good PR firm can filter through the many possibilities to find events that will bring the right audience in touch with its clients' offerings. We've had great response to product distribution on both the local and national level, placing our skincare and cosmetic products into goodie bags at a celebrity events like the Oscars, the Emmys, the VMAs, and the SAG Awards. And we've been able to bring local consumers to their brands as well by inserting products and gift cards into the goodie bags at high-ticket charity social events. For national clients, regional grassroots outreach is a way to penetrate further into an existing market or introduce a product or a service to a new audience. For smaller regional and local clients, grassroots outreach is a relatively cost-effective adjunct to their advertising. Oftentimes, the only expense to your client is the price of the product or service given away, plus any marketing materials that they're inserting into gift bags. Sponsorship of events is pricier, but the packages tend to offer good exposure and come with other perks like blocks of tickets for that other popular grassroots effort, networking.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
As always, much thanks to Shamin Abbas here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shellens and Brad Forsyth. There's a campaign that basically could come back to haunt our friends at Federal Express. The word bailout has gone from descriptive to derogatory.
Oh, yeah.
Always thought it was derogatory.
I did, too.
In a multi-million dollar marketing campaign introduced, Federal Express objected to legislation that would make it easier to unionize the company by accusing its rival, UPS, of taking government bailouts. A FedEx-sponsored website, brownbailout.com, basically says that UPS is quietly seeking a congressional bailout designed to limit competition for overnight deliveries, along with a bailout-o-meter, bailout-o-meter, showing UPS's revenue and a spoof of a UPS commercial. The site includes statements like, "This is a bailout, plain and simple, and the American people won't stand for it." The real issue here is not government-supplied cash for UPS, but labor laws under which UPS and FedEx are classified. So
that's stretching it a little.
A lot
bit
of different things are going on in the industry.
What can Brown do for you? Apparently a lot.
Apparently so. Yeah exactly. What else do you have?
You know, Lakers Fisher joined the FRS Healthy Energy Team, Ray. Derek Fisher, a lot of people may know him. He's the latest athlete to join the FRS company's Health Energy Team, joined along with Lance Armstrong and Brooke Hansen, promoting the energy-boosting product. Apparently, a lot of people may not know this, but I think you're going to hear more about it to come. FRS stands for Free Radical Scavenger. Which, by the way, the company claims sales of the FRS products grew 275% in 2008. Congratulations.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll get me some of that, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Let me know how that works out, by the way.
Exactly. Our very thanks to our guest today. We've got Coming up next week, Kevin Smith with us here out of Detroit. We're going to talk about cars. More cars.
And cars, marketing, car branding, all that stuff.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a car show type show next week. But we do not fix carburetors nor figure out your brake problems.
Oh, come on, click.
Really, it's about the size of it, too. Hope you enjoyed the show. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com and by Captivate Network. Visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Tell a friend. It's a Big Radio Midgets production.